with an opportunity? Have growth prospects from the US reduced? Have growth prospects from India increased? Which are the top sell-side ideas in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space currently? What are the trends these experts are predicting in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space? Tune in to the third series of The Medicine Box, where I, Ekta Batra, talk to the top 6 sell-side analysts covering the Indian pharma and healthcare space and drill down to all of their ideas on trends and stocks.
Our guest on today's podcast is Sameer Baisiwala of Morgan Stanley. Sameer is Executive Director and a Senior Analyst at Morgan Stanley covering Indian healthcare and property. He is based in Mumbai and has been with Morgan Stanley since 1999. Hi Sameer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ekta. Pleasure being here.
Well, Sameer, let's start with this huge, comprehensive global report that Morgan Stanley has written on the biosimilar space. Give us a sense in terms of what this particular report is about.
Yeah, and thanks for asking this, Ekta, because biosimilar is a subject which is not so well understood by many, and these are very early stages of biosimilar launches. So therefore, what we did was Morgan Stanley analyst teams across the globe put their heads together and tried to see from their vantage point what exactly is going on. So cutting the long story short, the total global biotech market is about $280 billion out of a global pharma market of, say, $1.1 trillion. So this $280 billion has been a late invention in late 1990s, early 2000s. So now, progressively, we are going to see more and more of these loose patent expiration, which will be an opportunity for generics. Mm. So therefore, what we have done is we have picked up the top 9 products. They total up to $62 billion. And they are going to lose patent protection. They already started to do that, and they'll do that by 2025 all the way. So we have analyzed this. We have seen how what has been achieved till 2018, and what is it going to look like by 2025.
Okay, so $62 billion is the possible opportunity from these 9 products that you're talking about.
That's right.
The patent expiration will happen up to 2025. It's already begun. We've seen it with a couple of drugs.
Absolutely.
The Neulastas of the world and the Herceptins. But overall, what is the kind of opportunity that you probably see, say, from the US market?
So as we stand today, in early 2019, I would say we have, between these 9 products, we have about $2.9 billion in biosimilar revenues. In 2018 alone, and in the preceding 5 years, a lot has been achieved by these products in terms of answering scientific questions, in terms of winning market battles. So all the hard work has been done. People have seen how does the ecosystem reacts when you put a biosimilar in the market, from the payers, from the regulators, from patients and doctors. I must say that now when we are in 2019, we are at an inflection point. We think that this $2.9 billion is going to gradually ramp up to $13.3 billion by 2025. So that really is the is in the nutshell the way we are looking at it. And this is not going to be front-ended or back-ended. This is going to be a pretty much a gradual ramp up. I'll say about $1 to $1.5 billion addition, more like every year all the way till 2025. It's split between these 9 products. But just to answer your question, between US and Europe, Europe has been early to embrace this this theme. Regulators have been much more proactive. The pathway has been much more clearer, and so therefore there are more biosimilars in Europe today than the US. And consequently, right now the market looks at 65-35, 65 Europe and 35% of 2.9 billion is in the US.
Okay.
But by the time we go to 2025, 74% of incremental revenues is really going to come from US. So the big growth driver for biosimilars over the next 7 years will be US.
Why is that? Is it because the US is just going to start ramping up in terms of product approvals?
Yeah, so two or three things to that. So first of all, per product, which is per biotech branded product, US typically has almost 2x the revenues. So if you just take for example, Herceptin is about $3 billion in US, and it's about $1.5-$2 billion is in Europe, and part of that is again a subcut, so much smaller. So the branded sales to begin with is much larger in the US. Second, Europe has already seen more patent expiries which have already been converted into biosims. US is going to see all of that play out as you go forward. Third, the IP situation, which is the patent litigations in Europe, is much more sorted. So they typically don't end up delaying biosimilars, but in US it's the other way around. There are about 25, 30, 50, even 70 patents per branded product, and so therefore biosimilars end up getting a fair bit delayed. So a couple of products which are already off patent in Europe, say for example Humira, which went off patent in November 2018, will go off patent in or will be open for biosimilars by 2023. So therefore, US has got a lot more to catch up on, and therefore, we are going to see US build out happening now.
Okay. But the key argument about biosimilars, and it seems to be a place where everybody seems to be split either as a complete bull on it or a complete bear on it. The bearish view is that, you know, the innovators are not going to let go of their market share. They're going to increase the likelihood of interchangeability being very low for biosimilars. Higher amount of competition, which would eventually come in, and you know, there would be price erosion. So maybe your return on equity is not going to look as lucrative when you invest as much as you do in terms of you know, investing in that particular biosimilar. So what is your take on these two arguments?
I think you touched upon all the right chords, and I would say all of this is true and all of this is not so true in the sense that it works in bits and pieces, and that's the whole effort that we've tried to do in this report, is try to put all of this together and see things in the holistic manner. I would say that if you look at 2018 revenues of $2.9 billion, it essentially 90% of this is split between just 8 or 9 products. Seven to eight products. So per product, we have achieved about $500 to $700 million sales in just 1 year. My guess is each of these would be about 40% plus net margins. So it just means that with 1 year sales, you pay for your entire development cost. My guess is even part of good part of CapEx as well. So therefore, the success is there to be seen. While I say that, what is also true is that innovator is not making it any easy. So all of what you had said has played out. So innovator is fighting it out in terms of pricing. So unlike small molecules, here even the brand price drop is also seen. So for example, if we have seen biosimilar price drop by 50%, innovator is probably dropping by 25 or 30%. So he's there to compete with you. The market take up, as it happens in small molecules, about 80% or so in 12 months. Here we have seen about 15 to 20% market adoption in 12 months. So it's much slower in the case of biosimilars. So we have seen J&J fight it out very aggressively in the US for Remicade through exclusionary contracts and bundling of their whole portfolio while giving the rebates. So the biosimilar adoption has been only 7% even after 3 years. So we are seeing bits and pieces of all of this being played out. But again, let me just emphasize, because the starting point is so low and the size of the opportunity is so large, say $3 or $4 billion in the branded revenues, even if you drop prices 50% and you take 20% market share, it still is really hundreds of millions of dollars per product for biosimilar, which makes it very attractive.
Okay. So where do Indian companies stand when it comes to the biosimilar race? We know that there's one company which has managed to crack the code when it comes to biosimilars, but does India or the Indian industry as a whole have the ability to capitalize on this biosimilar opportunity?
Yes, so as you know, Ekta, I would be a bit constrained to not talk about stocks,
but the industry in general.
Specific names. But let me just say that India will play its small role in this big theme, which is going to play out.
small role in its in the big theme, in but big we have a big role in the generics market. So you're saying that it's going to be a small role in the biosimilar market.
Yes, and to come to a big role in the generic space, where you had Hatch-Waxman played out in early 1980s, it took us about three to four decades to come to this point.
Oh.
My guess here is biosimilars is where the small molecules were there in early 1990s. So we have got a long runway. So the small role can get bigger if companies do invest more here in India in biosimilar space. But that having said, so we are seeing some couple of Korean companies playing a big role. India has its own role to play. Then we've got a couple of interesting players in Europe and a couple of players in US. So it's not very competitive market, and each of these developer and manufacturer on the back end is partnered with the front end in the US and European markets. So it may look like 10, 12 players, but if you just break it up between the partnerships, it, it literally is five or six alliances which is really operating in this space. Coming to coming to India, you're right. So I would say some company has taken a more global view and is doing global development. So everything is keeping the global market in mind. Some companies, I would say more companies have taken the emerging market route, and then they are, their product is more compliant to emerging markets and not really for the regulated markets, nor have they invested enough in capacities to go to US and Europe. And then there's some hybrid with one product in for Europe and then others for emerging markets. So that's how Indian landscape looks like.
For the biosimilar market in general, say 5, 7, maybe 8, 10 years down the line, will we be talking about price pressure in the biosimilar market like we talk about it in the generic market?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
generic formulation, ANDA market.
Yes. So we have done a fair bit of work to assess how this, how the competitive landscape is going to play out over the next 7 years. And you can see that work work in the report. So I would say that we expect two-player market dynamics per brand or per product to go up to maybe about five of, or thereabouts in 7 years from now. So two-player to five-player player market. So it still is not very competitive. I think there still is going to be a fair bit of money to be made. As I said, if you do the math, and on a $2 or $3 billion addressable market on per product per geography, and you take adoption to be maybe 70% by that time, and if you drop prices by 60 or 65 or even more, and divide that by five player, it still is a
couple of hundred million dollars
at the very minimum opportunity size. So what we have done is in our $13.3 billion estimate by 2025. We are seeing each product to be about $1 to $1.5 billion in the opportunity size, so between US and Europe put together. So, so split between four or five players still is a fair bit of money to be made out
there. Okay. What about the US markets as of now with price pressure and you know, multiple amount of companies entering the generic formulation market or in general the ANDA market? Do you expect that the fundamentals of the US market have completely changed? It's not going to be the primary earnings driver for, say, Indian companies?
So switching gears from biosimilars to what we have been doing all these years, small molecule. So I would say that pressure in the US market is abating. The playground is becoming a bit more greener in two terms. One is in terms of pricing pressure. So earlier from mid mid-teens or a bit higher price pressure, it has now come down to about late single digits, so 7 to 8% sort of a price pressure. So so that pressure is abating. And that's because there were two factors driving it. One was the customer consolidation. That has receded a lot. And the second is supply-led, which is more approval per product. And so, so the second still remains relevant. As you know, the third wave or fourth wave of Indian companies are still filing more ANDAs for the older molecules. So that part would remain. But the first issue is really done for. So it's getting a bit better for Indian companies to play there. Second, I would say some of the traditional US European competitors have started to move out of this market. So for example, Teva has announced that's going to shut down dozens of manufacturing sites, which means a fair bit of that would be discontinuing supplies into the market. And that is sort of opening up volume gain story for the incumbents, which include some of the Indian players. And we've already seen that to start and that to pick up. And that's going to be a gradual progress. Mm-hmm. And third, I would say, is the FDA's scrutiny. So versus 5 or 4 years back, when we saw some of the larger sites like, the Moraya, Halol, and Srikakulam, all of these getting into FDA problems. Now we are seeing all of them come out of that problem. So I think from site compliance standpoint, there are less which are stuck and more which are now in operating conditions. So therefore, we expect US to be a fair bit better placed, better market to be in for Indian companies.
Mm-hmm.
Just one final point on that, but the way to make money in the US is now to get a good product approvals in place. These companies should get, they'll each get 10 to 15 new approvals, but hopefully 2 to 4 of these are nice low competition ones.
Mm.
If that happens and companies which can deliver on that, is when we'll see a meaningful ramp up in US revenues.
Okay. With regards to India, we have the elections coming up. We've had a couple of schemes which have been launched. For example, there is, generic drugs which are available much more easily as compared to, say, 5 years ago. We have the Ayushman Bharat scheme which is rolled out. How lucrative is the Indian market, according to you?
See, I think Indian market today is about $17 billion or so in size.
$17 billion
in revenues, the local market, and growing at roughly 10 to 12%, I would say. And my guess here is that every 6 to 7 years, we should see this market double. And so therefore, we are going to about $30 billion by 2025, and then again go to about $60 billion about by 2032 or 33 or so, or thereabouts. Just as a comparison, Chinese market today, the numbers are not really in stone, but and the estimates vary, but I believe it's between $80 to $100 billion already, the local market.
Mm.
And the population size, as you know, is not too different. So where India contrasts is the fact that we have much younger population.
Mm.
Our median age is about 27. And with such young people, you don't need too many drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So as the population ages over the next 10 or 15 years,
that's when the market will pick up.
We will have explosion in demand. And second, I would say is India still has a per capita, which is pretty low, $1,800, $2,000. And so therefore, affordability is not there.
Mm-hmm.
Medical facilities do not reach millions and millions of people in the interior. So as the per capita goes to $4,000 or $6,000, we would see much better take up for these drugs. So these two factors, age and affordability, is what is going to get addressed over 10, 15 years. And we should start seeing actually faster growth over that time period versus what we have right now.
Okay, but what about this regulatory uncertainty which India comes with? Overnight there's an FDC ban which takes place, or there is price control which takes place now even for medical devices. Does that change your view on India? Does it make you maybe a little apprehensive?
No, I think we have an essential drugs list.
Hmm.
And there the prices are being controlled.
Hmm.
And that list undergoes some change every 5 years or maybe even on an ad hoc basis every year. I think this is a smaller part to a very big story, which we just talked about.
Okay.
And I think my estimate is probably 20 to 25% of the overall market is getting price regulated.
Hmm.
70 plus is still not regulated. Which means there's a free pricing. Second point here is to price controls. Even today, if you see, India probably remains, and our drug prices vary a lot for the same molecule from very low to very high.
Yeah.
But if you take an average or a median price, we probably are one of the most inexpensively priced drug market in the world. So despite all of this, we see about 1 to 2% price increase on a portfolio-wide basis in India. Indian drug prices. So, and I think this is a trend that should continue simply because the starting point is very low.
Is China an important market according to you for companies to enter?
See, China so far has been a very closed market. So it's really the local Chinese players, and then there are MNCs companies. So, but it's not really been very porous for the generic industry. I think the regulations are changing now as Chinese government and Chinese companies are focusing more on innovation side. They have started to open the door even so slightly for the generic manufacturers. So I think there's a theme which can build up over next several years. But so far, it's been a very closed market.
Okay. All right. Well, Sameer, just leave us with a theme for this coming fiscal, for FY20, what do you think the big theme within pharma and healthcare is going to be?
Yeah, sure. So I think some of the things that we are going to hear more about. So first of all, I think given the last 2 and 3 years experiences for large caps, which has not been very, very, very happy one, we are going to see a lot more focus on cost control, cost cutting, R&D rationalization. So if we are not getting better profits by sales and revenue mix, then companies are going to come and cut down the costs. Second is, over the last 5 and 10 years, we have built out a lot of capacity. So I think increasingly we should have the lower capex, not higher as we go along, at least for this year and the next year.
Just on this capex bit, what about companies who sense that there's an API opportunity from China? There are some companies which are going ahead with capex on account of that front. What's your opinion there?
So I think there was some intermediate and raw material supply shock, I would say 2 or 3 quarters back. I think we are hearing less and less of it at the moment.
Okay.
So to me it looks like
passing phase.
Not a theme that is going to get bigger. There may be some opportunity here and there, but not a big one, and not something like what we've seen in specialty and chemicals.
Okay, so back to the themes then, Sameer.
So the second point was lower capex as we go forward. Third would be all eyes would be there on the performance of specialty products, which companies launched in 2018. As you know, the big ones are Ilumya, and then we have SoloSec. So expectations are on a three-digit million-dollar sales as we go along. So people will be watching them very closely, and whether new capital allocation goes towards specialty side or not. And the final one I would say would be resumption of growth back here in the domestic and other emerging markets. So these should be the 3 or 4 key big themes that should that we should see in fiscal 20. Little bit on the US side, we should start seeing some meaningful material and approvals for some companies, not a big theme, which should help them grow their US revenues.
Okay, all right, Sameer, thank you very much for joining in. On that note, we're going to wrap up on this edition of The Medicine Box. It's a pleasure, and we hope to have you back on very soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Vic.